Hazel watched under lowered lids as they took the pregnant woman away in a ground car. She still wasn't sure of the woman's name, even though the woman had traced it into her arm. Could Brunn be right? What kind of name was that? A nickname for something, most likely, but they had not dared talk enough to make sure. Her yellow hair shone in the sun of this planet, much longer than it had been when Hazel had first seen her.
I'm taking the children.
The other men nodded and moved away.
Come along, girlie.
Hazel followed him, a little breathless with the unaccustomed exercise and the oppressive heat, Brandy holding one hand and Stassi the other. She wondered where the boys were. She hadn't seen them for a long time. She wondered even more about Stinky and pushed that thought aside too. The man led them through a gate and across a wide, paved space so hot her feet burned. The little girls began to lag. The man turned.
Here, I'll carry them.
He scooped them up. They stiffened, turning their faces to Hazel.
Only a little farther.
Hazel stepped as lightly as she could. He stopped at last, beside a row of ground cars. A strip of something soft lay there.
Stand on that.
Hazel stepped onto it, and it was cool beneath her feet. He put the little girls down, and they each grabbed a hand. He punched something on a control panel set on a post, and one of the ground cars popped its doors. The man got in, fiddled with the controls, then put his head back out.
All of you, into the back.
Hazel pushed the little girls into the back of the ground car. It was soft inside, with cool air coming out of vents. After she climbed in, the door closed without her touching it. She noticed that there were no door handles on the inside either.
I'm taking you home for now.
The car moved off. Hazel looked out the windows, but they were frosted, so she couldn't see. Between the back seat and the front, a dark panel had risen so that she couldn't see out the front either. The car moved smoothly, though, with no sudden jerks. After some time, the car stopped and the man opened the door from the outside.
Come along now. Be good.
They were on a wide, paved street between stone buildings, perhaps two stories tall, with a park of some kind just down the block. Hazel caught a glimpse of bright flowers arranged in some sort of pattern, but dared not take a real look. Instead, she followed the man across a stone-flagged walk to the entrance of the nearest building. A heavy carved door opened by a shorter man wearing white trousers and overshirt. Her escort led them into the house, down a hall, into a large room with big windows opening on a garden. He pointed to a place near the door.
Wait here.
Hazel stood, holding the little girls to her. He walked across the room and sat in a chair that faced the door. A girl about Hazel's age, wearing a plain brown dress, scurried into the room, carrying a tray with a pitcher of some liquid and a tall mug. Hazel noticed that she kept her eyes lowered, moving with quick, short steps that didn't stretch her ankle-length skirt. Hazel did not dare to watch her all the way to the man's chair. The girl left, her busy feet slipping hurriedly past Hazel. Did she look at Hazel? The littles were looking at her. Hazel squeezed their shoulders in warning. As the legs flashed past her, bare to the knee, in sandals, Hazel realized it must be a boy.
Daddy! You're home!
Hey, pard. Were you good? Did you take care of your mother?
Yes, sir.
That's my boy.
Hazel saw the small bare feet of three girls, the slim skirts that hobbled their ankles, and, so astonishing she almost forgot and lifted her eyes, a woman's feet angled up on high, pointed heels beneath full skirts. The girls rushed forward. The woman strode. Hazel peeked through lowered lids to see a child hardly bigger than Brandy throw herself at her father's lap.
Daddy!
A larger girl, head down, moved up to nestle against his side. One, still larger, moved to his other side. The man kissed each girl. Hazel wanted to cry. She could feel the littles trembling. They wanted a cuddle, too. They would break away any moment now. She clutched at them harder.
I brought you something. Look at there.
Hazel could feel, as if it were sunlight, their gazes on her and the littles.
Found them on a merchanter we captured. The girlie's a bit old, but biddable. Been no trouble. The two little ones, well, one of them's too talkative. We'll just have to see. You take them on back and get them settled. Girlie's a virgin, all right. Doc checked.
Hazel saw the wide skirt, a wife's skirt, and then a firm hand on her shoulder, pushing. She obeyed, walking ahead of the woman, bringing the littles with her. She had no idea what was coming.
You can look at me in here.
Hazel looked up. The woman had a broad, peaceful-looking face, with a crown of gray-brown hair in a braid above it. She had big, broad hands and a big, broad body.
Let's see you, honey. That's the ugliest dress I ever did see.
Hazel said nothing. She wasn't about to get into trouble if she could help it.
Didn't your folks teach you anything about sewing?
Hazel shook her head.
You can talk, too, as long as you keep it low, no hollering.
I don't know how to sew.
Hazel's voice felt stiff. It had been so long since she said a whole sentence.
Well, you just have to learn. You can't go around looking like that, not in this family.
Hazel bobbed her head. Brandy tugged on her hand.
Hungry.
The woman looked down at the littles, her face creased with something Hazel could not read.
These little'uns yours? Sisters?
No.
No, ma'am. Didn't your folks teach you any manners?
No, ma'am.
Well, I sure will. Now let me think. You little'uns will fit into Mary Lou and Sally Ann's things, but you, girlie, phew, we have to find a name for you, too.
My name's Hazel.
Not anymore. Your old life is gone, and your old name with it. You put off the works of the devil and the devil's name. You will put on a godly name when we find the right one.
In the next weeks, Hazel settled into a life as far from her experience as the Raider's ship had been. She slept in a room with 10 other girls, all near or just past puberty, but unmarried. It was called the Virgin's Bower. Their room opened onto a tiny courtyard separated from the main garden by a stone screen and walled off from anything but their room. The room's other entrance was to a long corridor that led back to the main house without passing any other door. The first evening, one of the other girls helped Hazel unroll her bedding onto a wooden bunk, helped her straighten the cover properly.
So we're safe.
These were all, she discovered, daughters of the man who had brought her here. Daughters of four wives who had produced all the other children in the house. Only the children of his first wife were permitted in the great room, and only when he summoned them. The others, when he wanted to see them, went to the second parlor.
Y'all are the first outlanders in our household. Can't no one have outlanders unless they got enough children to dilute the influence of y'all's heathen ways.
So we can teach you right from wrong.
In short order, Hazel was clad in the same snug long skirt and long-sleeved top as the others. She learned to shuffle in quick steps. She learned how to navigate the corridors and rooms of the big house that seemed to sprawl on forever. She learned to stand aside respectfully when the boys ran down the hall, to duck her chin so that even the little boys, looking up, did not meet her gaze. Once a day, she was allowed to sit with Brandy and Stassi, if all her work was done. At first, they ran to her and clung, silent, crying into her shoulder. But as the days passed, they adjusted to whatever their life was like. She had asked, but they found it hard to tell her. And no wonder. They had been hardly able to talk clearly when the ship was taken, and too many things had happened. They had eaten honey cakes, or they had new dresses, was all they could say. At least they were being fed and cared for, and they had a little time each day to play in the garden. She saw them with the other small girls, tossing back and forth weighted streamers of bright colors. Her work was hard. The other girls her age were accomplished seamstresses, able to produce long, smooth, straight seams. They all knew how to cut cloth and shape garments. Now they were learning embroidery, cutwork, lacework, and other fine needlework. Hazel had to master plain knitting, crochet, and spend hours hemming bedsheets and bath towels. Besides sewing, she was taught cooking. To the wives' horror, she did not even know how to peel potatoes or chop carrots.
Imagine letting a poor girl grow up knowing so little. What did they expect you to do, child? Marry a man so rich and dissolute he would expect your servants to do everything.
We had machines.
Prima shook a finger at Hazel.
Best forget about machines, girl. The devil's ways. Making idle hands and giving women ideas. No machines here. Just honest women doing women's work the way it should be done.
Tertia bowed as she offered a bowl.
A touch more pot herb, my dear, but otherwise quite satisfactory.
Hazel had to admit that the kitchen smelled better than any ship's galley she'd ever been in. Every day, fresh bread from the big brick ovens. Every day, fresh food prepared from the produce of the garden. And she liked chopping carrots, even onions, better than those long, straight seams. The women even laughed, here by themselves, and softly. But they laughed. Never at the men, though. None of the jokes she'd heard all her life, bantering between the men and women of the crew. She wanted to ask why. She had 1,000 questions, 1,000,000. But she'd already noticed that girls didn't ask questions except about their work. How to do this, when to do that. And even then, they were often told to pay better attention. She did her best, struggling to earn her daily visit with Brandy and Stassi. The women were quick to correct her mistakes, but she sensed that they were not hostile. They liked her as well as they could have liked any stranger thrust into their closed society, and they were as kind as custom allowed. The closed car had gone an unknowable distance, far enough for Brunn to feel mildly nauseated, when it stopped finally. Someone outside opened the door. A tall woman, the first woman she had seen on this world, reached in and grabbed her arm.
Come on, you! Get out of that!
Brunn struggled up and out of the car with difficulty, not helped by the woman's hard grip. She looked around. The ground car looked like an illustration out of one of her father's oldest books, high and boxy. The street on which it had driven was wide, brick-paved, and edged with low stone and brick buildings, none more than 3 stories tall. The woman yanked at her arm, and Brunn nearly staggered.
No time for lollygagging. You don't need to be sightseeing. Get yourself inside the house like the decent woman you ain't.
Brunn could not move fast enough to satisfy the woman, even with one of the men helping. She was too big, too awkward, and the stones of the front walk hurt her feet. She glanced up at the building they were urging her towards and nearly fell up a stone step. But she had seen it. Made of heavy stone blocks, it had no windows on this side, and beside the heavy door was a tall, stout man who had the body language of every door guard Brunn had ever seen.
A prison?
It might as well have been, she found when she was inside.
Since you're an ignorant little outlander slut and you don't know what decent folks know, listen up and listen good. You're pregnant and you ain't married. That makes you a slut. You're gonna stay here with the other sluts until your baby's born and for a few weeks after that. You're gonna cook, clean, and sew. You will be silent like all the others. You are here to listen, not talk. If I catch you whispering or lip-speaking with other women, you'll be locked in your room for a day.
With that, the matron pushed her into a narrow room with a bed and a small cabinet beside it and shut the door on her. Brunn sagged onto the bed.
And no sitting on the bed during work hours. We don't put up with laziness here. Get your sewing basket. You got plenty to do.
She pointed at the cabinet. Brunn heaved herself up and opened the door. Inside was a round basket and a pile of folded cloth.
Decent clothes for yourself, first of all. Now come along to the sewing room.
She led the way along a stone-floored corridor to a room that opened on an interior court. 5 pregnant women sat busy at their handwork. None of them looked up. Brunn could not see their faces until she was sitting down herself. One had a wry face, pulled to the right by some damage. Brunn could see no scar and wondered what had caused it. But the warden tapped her head with a hard finger.
Hey, get busy, you! Less looking, more sewing.
The Serrano Legacy, Rules of Engagement, is continued on the next CD.